The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Hey there.
So today we're tackling a really game-changing book. I think it's fair to say it shook things up for a lot of people.
Oh, definitely. We're talking about Timothy Ferris's The 4-Hour Workweek.
Exactly. It really forced a generation to ask, why do we work the way we do? Is this the only way?
Mm-hmm. And it takes aim squarely at what Ferris calls the deferred life plan.
Okay, what exactly is that?
It's that standard script, you know?
Yeah.
Work like crazy for 40, maybe 50 years, could be at a job you don't even like.
All right. Sacrifice your present.
All to save up for this distant retirement dream at 65, a dream that might not even happen.
So why does he think that traditional path is so, well, fundamentally flawed? And risky.
Well, it's built on a stack of assumptions, isn't it? You assume you'll be healthy enough to enjoy retirement.
Good point.
You assume the economy will hold up, your savings will be enough, and, you know, you assume you won't regret putting off actually living until it's potentially too late.
So what's his alternative, his proposal?
It's radical. He calls it lifestyle design. Basically, forget waiting. Redesign your work and life right now.
But it's not about, like, being lazy or just quitting everything, is it?
Not at all. It's more strategic. It's about decoupling your income from the hours you physically put in.
Ah, okay. So achieving financial freedom, yes, but also freedom of time and location, mobility.
Precisely. And doing it throughout your life, not banking it all on some far off, maybe.
Interesting. It sounds like turning your life into a kind of experiment.
That's a great way to put it. And to understand how Ferris got there, you really need to look at the man himself.
Right. Timothy Ferris. He's known as this sort of human guinea pig, right?
Exactly. He's an entrepreneur, investor, went to Princeton. But this whole philosophy, it didn't come from academia.
No, it came from his own crisis, didn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely did. He started a sports nutrition company, Brain Quicken. It was successful, but...
But it completely consumed him.
Yeah, he talks about working 80, sometimes even 100 hours a week, total burnout. He was successful on paper, but miserable.
So his credibility comes from actually living through that failure, that unsustainable success.
Precisely. He hit a wall and realized the standard path, even for entrepreneurs, was broken. So he used his own business as a lab.
A lab to do what?
To systematically cut down his own hours. He went from that crazy 80 plus down to just 4 hours a week.
4 hours.
Yeah.
While keeping the business running.
Not just running. He made it more profitable and efficient in the process.
Wow. So he basically reverse engineered how to work less and earn more, using himself as the test subject.
Yeah. And that's his whole thing, isn't it? He doesn't just theorize. He tests everything ruthlessly.
Like learning languages super fast or becoming a tango champion.
Or kickboxing, yeah. He applies this systematic, almost obsessive efficiency to learning anything quickly. He's a practitioner.
Okay, so that experimental mindset, that led him to define this new goal, right? Not just traditional wealth.
Exactly. He coined the term the new rich, or NR.
Let's unpack that. Who's the audience he's really speaking to with this book, and what defines this new rich?
Well, the audience is pretty broad. It's anyone feeling trapped, really. Could be someone in a corporate job just grinding it out.
Or an entrepreneur who's like drowning in their own business, working in it instead of on it.
Exactly. And the new rich. They're the ones who've shifted their priorities. For them, the ultimate currency isn't just dollars in the bank.
It's time and freedom.
Time and mobility. Freedom. They value having control over when, where, and how they work and live more than just maximizing the absolute income number.
So it's less about hoarding millions for later and more about generating enough cash flow to live a luxurious life now, spreading
right.
The enjoyment out.
That's the core idea. Distribute the retirement lifestyle throughout your active life.
Okay. And the book itself, how is it structured? Is it just philosophy or is there a plan?
Oh, it's very much a plan, a blueprint, really. He organizes everything around this four-step acronym, DEAL. It's designed to take you from that overworked state to a liberated lifestyle designer.
DEAL. Okay, what does that stand for?
D is for definition, getting your mindset right, defining your goals.
Okay.
E is for elimination, getting rid of the unnecessary, focusing on what matters. Ruthless productivity.
Got it.
A is for automation, building systems, income streams that run themselves.
Makes sense.
And L is for liberation. Achieving that freedom, the location independence, the mini retirements.
All right. DEAL, definition, elimination, automation, liberation. Let's dive into the first part then. Definition and elimination.
Sounds good. So definition, this is mostly about a mental shift, a psychological overhaul, really.
And the first big concept here is understanding the difference between absolute income and, what was it, relative income.
That's the one. Absolute income is just the total amount you earn, right? The headline number.
Like, I make $100,000 a year.
Exactly. But relative income looks at that income in relation to the time it costs you. What's your effective hourly wage?
Why is that distinction so important for him?
Because if you make that $100K but you're chained to your desk for 80 hours a week, your actual time value is pretty low, and you have zero time to enjoy the money anyway.
Right. Whereas someone using his methods might earn, say, $50K.
But only work, like, 4 or 5 hours a week because they've automated things or used geo-arbitrage. Their relative wealth, measured in freedom and time per dollar earned, is way higher. It forces you to think about impact, not just hours clocked.
That makes sense. Now, within definition, he has this tool. It sounds kind of counterintuitive. Fear setting, not goal setting.
Yeah, I love this one, too. It's brilliant. Instead of just visualizing success, which can feel kind of abstract,
right,
you deliberately define your worst-case scenarios. What's the absolute worst that could happen if you try this thing, quit your job, start a business, ask for remote work?
Okay. So you list the nightmares. Then what?
Then you figure out specifically how you could prevent each nightmare, or how you'd repair the damage if it did happen. What steps would you take?
Ah, so you make the fear concrete and manageable.
Exactly. And then crucially, you compare that now manageable risk to the often huge cost of doing nothing, the cost of staying stuck.
That's powerful. It kind of defangs the fear, doesn't it? Puts it in perspective.
Totally. You realize most worst cases are temporary or fixable, and suddenly the real risk looks like staying in that deferred life plan indefinitely.
Okay, so fear setting clears the path. Then comes dreamlining. What's that?
Dreamlining is about making your goals concrete and actionable, turning vague wishes like, I want to travel more,
into something specific.
Right. You define maybe 5 things you dream of doing or having, then you calculate the exact monthly cost to make them happen. This gives you your target monthly income, or TMI.
So if I want to, say, learn Italian in Florence for 3 months.
You price it out. Flights, rent there, food, lessons, everything. Divide by 3. That's the monthly income you need to generate, maybe passively, to fund that specific dream.
It turns a fuzzy wish into a hard number, a target.
Precisely. Makes it feel real, achievable, not just someday, maybe.
Okay, that's definition covered. What about elimination? This sounds like where the productivity hacks come in.
Absolutely. Elimination is all about freeing up time by stopping useless activities. It's about being effective, not just efficient or busy.
And he bases this on 2 core principles.
2 big ones. First, Pareto's law, the 80-20 rule. You've probably heard of it.
Yeah, 80% of the results come from 20% of the effort.
That's the one. For the new rich, this is gospel. You have to identify that vital 20%, the clients, the tasks, the products that deliver most of the value,
yeah,
and then ruthlessly eliminate, automate, or delegate the other 80%, the low-value noise that keeps you busy but not productive.
Okay, 80-20. What's the second principle?
Parkinson's law.
This one's also quite well known. Work expands to fill the time you allocate to it. Right. You give yourself all day to write a report. It'll take all day.
Exactly. So Ferris argues you need to set aggressive, even seemingly unreasonable, deadlines for tasks. This forces you to focus only on the critical actions needed to get it done. You cut the fluff.
You achieve more in less time by creating urgency.
Mm-hmm. And to help maintain that focus, he pushes the idea of a low information diet.
Selective ignorance.
Pretty much. Stop consuming junk information, mindless news browsing, irrelevant emails, social media that doesn't serve your goals. Protect your mental bandwidth.
Makes sense. And there's a practical tactic he mentions, batching.
Yes. This is super actionable. Instead of constantly context switching, you group similar tasks together.
Like email.
Email is the classic example. Check and respond to email only once or twice a day at set times, like 10 a.m. and maybe 4 p.m. That's it.
Instead of letting every ping interrupt you.
Right. You reclaim these huge chunks of uninterrupted time for deep work. It's amazing how much more you get done. Once you've mastered elimination, you've freed up the time to build the next phase.
Which brings us to automation.
Exactly. This is where the system building comes in. Remember, the goal isn't just to work less. It's to create income streams that don't require your constant input.
So automating that essential 20% you identified earlier.
Right. Building systems that make money for you.
And the first tool he talks about is the virtual assistant, the VA, using geo-arbitrage.
Yep. leveraging lower labor costs in other countries to hire skilled remote assistants. They can handle tons of stuff, professional tasks, research, scheduling, even personal errands.
But it's more than just delegating tasks, isn't it? He talks about building a specific kind of business.
He does. He calls it the muse.
The muse that defines a muse business.
It's a business often based around a niche product. Could be physical, could be information. Nowadays, maybe software or AI tools.
Okay.
But the key is that it's designed from the ground up for automation and outsourcing. Manufacturing, shipping, customer service, billing, everything is handled by systems or other people.
So your role is owner, architect, not manager, not worker bee.
Exactly. The goal is management by absence. You design it so it runs without you needing to be involved day to day.
That sounds like the dream, but starting a business feels incredibly risky. How does he suggest tackling that fear?
With micro testing. This is crucial. Before you pour time and money into building the muse,
you test the demand first.
Right. You create a simple web page, maybe even just an ad describing your potential product. You run a small, cheap online ad campaign pointing to it.
And see if people click buy or show real interest.
Exactly. If they do, then you know there's demand and you can build the product with much less risk if nobody bites. You saved yourself a ton of effort and cash. It's about validating ideas cheaply.
Data-driven de-risking. I like that. Okay, so you've defined, eliminated, automated. What's the final step? Liberation.
Liberation is about cashing in on all that system building. It's about achieving that freedom of location and time.
And for people still in traditional jobs, how do they get liberated?
He has a strategy for employees called the Disappearing Act. It's basically a script for negotiating remote work.
How does that work?
You start by over-delivering, becoming really valuable. Then you propose a small remote trial, maybe one day a week from home.
Okay.
You make sure your productivity actually increases during that trial, providing proof. Then you gradually ask to expand it, always backing it up with results, showing you're more effective away from office distractions.
That sounds logical.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the current push for return to office, is that still realistic today?
It's definitely tougher now than maybe it was when the book first came out. You need a stronger case.
Mm-hmm.
But the underlying principle still holds. You have to demonstrate your value isn't tied to your physical presence. Focus on output, not FaceTime. And frame it as boosting efficiency for the company, not just a perk for you. Remote work is more normalized now, so the conversation's different.
And the ultimate payoff for all this deal framework?
The big payoff is the ability to take mini retirements.
Ah, yes. This is maybe the most appealing part for many people.
Totally. Instead of one massive retirement block at 65, you distribute these extended breaks 1 month, 3 months, 6 months throughout your entire working life.
For travel, learning a skill, pursuing a passion project, whatever.
Exactly. Living life fully now, not deferring it all. It's a fundamental shift away from that scarcity mindset of the deferred life plan.
Okay, so we've gone through deal. Let's maybe pull back and synthesize. What are the really big, enduring themes or messages from the book?
I think the first one, and maybe the most important, is redefining wealth as freedom.
Right. It's not just about the money.
No. The real measure of wealth for the new rich is autonomy. It's time. It's mobility. Having $1 million doesn't make you wealthy if you have zero time to enjoy it or no control over your life.
That links straight into another key idea, maybe summed up by that quote. Focus on being productive instead of busy.
Yes. That hits the nail on the head. Effectiveness over just churning out activity. Busyness is often a sign you haven't eliminated the unimportant 80%. Real productivity might even involve more downtime because you focused intensely on the critical few things.
And then there's the critique of the traditional path, the flaw of the deferred life plan. He has that quote.
Someday is a disease that will take your dreams to the grave with you.
Oof. That's direct.
It is. It's a direct attack on procrastination, on waiting for the perfect time that never comes. Action, even imperfect action, is the antidote.
And finally, that idea about fear.
Right. What we fear doing most is usually what we most need to do.
Using fear as a compass.
Exactly. Fear setting helps here, but the core idea is that the discomfort, the anxiety around making a big change, that often signals exactly where the most growth and opportunity lie. Lean into it.
Okay. Powerful themes. Let's bring it down to earth. For someone listening right now, maybe you're feeling inspired but also overwhelmed. What are some immediate practical things they can do today based on these ideas without, you know, quitting their job tomorrow?
Good question. Start small. implement the low information diet right now.
Yeah.
Go through your inbox, unsubscribe from newsletters you don't read or that don't directly help you. Turn off notifications on your computer and phone, all of them.
Just reclaiming that focus.
Exactly. And try batching. Pick one thing, like email. Commit for 1 week. Only check and process email at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. See how much focus time you gain. It's usually significant.
Okay, that's doable. What are the goals like?
Try dreamlining tonight. Yeah. Seriously. Pick one big, exciting goal, maybe a trip, learning something new, whatever. Calculate the actual monthly cost. Get that target monthly income number.
Making a dream concrete.
Right. It shifts it from someday to, okay, this is the target I need to hit. Much more motivating.
And for someone in a job, thinking about the 80-20 rule.
Analyze your work. Honestly ask, what 20% of my activities generate 80% of the positive results my boss cares about? Or 80% of the value for the company?
Identify your high-impact tasks.
Yeah. Then focus your energy there. And start looking for ways to gently minimize, delegate, or automate the low-impact 80%. Even small shifts can free up surprising amounts of time and mental energy.
That all sounds very actionable. Thinking back on our dive into this, what stood out most to you? Or what feels most relevant now?
For me, it's how the core principle using automation and systems to decouple time from income is actually more achievable today than when he first wrote it. With current tech, AI tools, global platforms, the potential for building a muse or achieving locational independence is arguably greater.
That's a great point. The tools have caught up with the philosophy.
Yeah.
What surprised me, revisiting it, was just how much it's fundamentally a mindset book. The tools are secondary to that initial decision to reject the default path.
Absolutely. That's the foundation. The biggest takeaway might just be that your lifestyle is a choice. The 9-to-5, retire at 65 path isn't mandatory. It's just one option, one script. Ferris provides the framework to consciously design a different one, centered on freedom and fulfillment now. It has to be deliberate.
A powerful reminder. It's about taking control of the design. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.